Episode 242.
One of the participants brought up customers looking up, you know, YouTube and Google and everything else and the parts. And I said, why do you think they do that? And one guy said, because they're cheap. And another guy said, because they're trying to save money. I said, guys, you're not thinking this through. It's because they're afraid. See, if you had the complete trust of somebody, would they call? Would they go online and look? They don't have the time. It's because they don't trust. And I think that's the bigger issue, because if we work on our trust, that goes away.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Welcome, automotive aftermarket professionals, to episode 242 of Remarkable Results Radio with my guest, Rick White, president and lead coach from 180biz. Carm Capriotto here, delivering on my passion to inspire automotive aftermarket professionals through this awesome, on-demand, digital medium. I thank you for your support of the aftermarket's premier podcast. Hey, this episode is presented by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. They are the reason you enjoy these great aftermarket interviews. When you need innovation and quality, you need Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Anco, Champion, Sealed Power, FP Diesel, and more. They're the parts techs trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com. And hey, thanks for supporting these brands. You know, every podcast episode gets their own show notes page. The show notes page will have additional bio information and the key talking points from my guest. Today's show notes with Rick White can be found at remarkableresults.biz/E242. Hey, a shout out to my new Facebook friends, Keith Williamson, Randy Pickering, and Stuart Terry, and my new LinkedIn connections, David Prater and Brian Politz. Welcome. And if you want to become more of an insider, get connected. I've got one convenient place for you to go, remarkableresults.biz/social. Every possible connection is there for you. You know, more and more my listeners are downloading the free iOS and Android app. The app is smart and easy to use. Every episode is conveniently at your fingertips. Never miss one bit of action. If you're new to the podcast, it's so easy to search through all the episodes. So just go to your app store, search for Remarkable Results Radio. Download, and hey, you're ready for your dose of insight and inspiration from every episode. FYI, I just hung out my speaker's shingle, so if you've got an organization or know of one in need of a speaker to bring the pulse of the aftermarket to their next conference, go to carmspeaks.com. There you'll find all about the three different speaking formats, my bio, and the media kit download. Now meet Rick White, the president and lead coach from 180biz. Here's an aftermarket professional that's on a crusade to improve how businesses are run. You're going to gain insights on communication, business culture, and mindset. You'll discover the four responsibilities of a shop owner and the three dynamics of a sales process. Rick also talks about the transparency of the internet and that we must change how we do business and how we bring insights to our customers. He also shares his view on where parts gross margins need to go in the information age of the internet. Clear your mind and now enjoy the interview with Rick White from 180biz. Hey, it's nice to be with Rick White, president and lead coach from 180biz. Hey, Rick.
Hello, Carm. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy we hooked up. You've been in the automotive for quite some time.
Well, I grew up in the industry. My father actually owned a repair shop and he also specialized in transmissions. I rebuilt my first transmission when I was 17 years old.
Okay, so you got some grease under your nails, huh?
Yeah, you cut me. I bleed Dextran.
What motivated you to get out and get into the world of coaching and training and leading?
So I went through two divorces. And after the second divorce, and then 9/11 hit back in 2001, and I just didn't have the energy I thought. I just wasn't interested anymore. So I wanted to try something different. So I went into software. Went to work with the software company that I was using as a management company, which was Genesis 4 Corporation. And while I was working there in 2003, we had a user that called me up one day because I was doing training and support on the system. And I also helped them from an owner's perspective on what to add to the program. I had a user call one day and he says, hey, talk to me about flat rate. How does flat rate pay work? So this was back in 2003. I sat down and I said, send me some reports. We looked at the reports and I called them back and said, listen, if you go to flat rate, you're going to spend more money on labor than you are now. What's the problem? I said, you're like the customer that comes in asking for an alignment, but they got a vibration. I said, what's your issue? And he says, I just had two of the best months I've ever had. I just broke $100,000 each month, but it cost me $15,000 the first month and $18,000 the second month. So he was losing money doing it. He says, I'm freaking out. I don't know what to do. Now, at that point, I said, well, I'm pretty good with numbers. If you want to send me the reports, let me see what I can do. So he pulled his P&L and his balance sheet and such, brought it over. And in the process of 2 years, I doubled his business with no increase in staff. Now, it's absolutely amazing because back then, my coaching style was very different than it is today. Back then, it was a my way or the highway kind of approach. And I also thought that all I needed to do was give people strategies to help them succeed. And that was all they needed. But I've learned since that you need a couch a lot more than you need strategies in a coaching business, because mindset is 80% of success. If I had taped those calls back then, you and I would be having a really good laugh right now. But today it's very, very different. Today it's helping people not only implement the strategies that, you know, that I give them, but it's helping them to believe that they can do it and see a better future, because everything we do is created in our mind first. You can't create a better business thinking you're a failure. You can't grow a business thinking you can't find techs. You know, you can't grow a business. You can't increase sales thinking customers don't have any money. So it all starts in our minds first. We've got to believe that it's out there. It's kind of like a circle. You start with the expectation or the potential, and then that creates your attitude and your outlook. Those create your actions. The actions create your results. And then we go back up to our potential. And what happens is, if I don't believe there's a lot of potential there, then I don't take the actions that I really should. And then I get the results that I was expecting, which were poor. And then I go up to my potential again and expect even less. And that's why the poorer are getting poorer in this country, is because their expectations, it's a downward spiral. See, and with the, it's the flip, right? The reverse is true as well. So if I go in thinking I'm going to have a really great year, I do my attitude, my outlook, the story I tell myself is different. My actions are better. I get better results. I go to the potential pool. Instead of coming to it with a thimble, I'm coming to it with a bathtub. And it just gets better and better. And that's how my business grows.
If you could nail down just one thing that you do, what is it?
I really believe I help build communication. Communication starts inside. And I help the shop owner get clear about what he is, what it is he wants, what it is he believes, and what he can do to make it happen. Then we take that focus, look at his staff, and say, how do these people help us get there? And how is it important to them? And then we start communicating that.
So are business owners walking around with a lot of fuzzy pictures?
Oh, a whole bunch. People will tell you what they don't want a whole lot faster than they'll tell you what they do.
And the reason that I ask that is that communications can be fuzzy. You can either, you know, sometimes there's that gap between how we perceive in each other's words.
Oh, absolutely. We think in images, and those images are distorted. We have distortion fields. Like even right now, Carm, you and I are talking, and there's a distortion field on your side. There's a distortion field on my side. Now, the goal is, when you're talking, I want to make sure I have the same image in my mind that you have in yours, and vice versa. When I'm speaking, I want to make sure you walk away with the image I have. But we've got to get through those distortion fields.
How do we get that done?
Very carefully. Well, first of all, it's to recognize that that happens. You know, I have a really favorite quote that says the single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it's taken place. That's George Bernard Shaw.
Love that quote.
It is just such a good quote, because so many of us think that the idea of communication is me speaking, but what I have to say is not near as important as what you hear.
It's getting through.
Exactly. It's making sure it's through. It's not even getting through or thinking it's through. I have to be sure it's through. Those distortion fields are built by our experience, our upbringing, our education, our outlook on life, our religious beliefs, everything goes into it. How I feel about this conversation and how I feel about you and vice versa, how you feel about the situation and how you feel about me, all of that comes into play. And yet we still got to get through my distortion field, through your distortion field, and hopefully have you end up with the same image in your mind as the one I'm trying to share.
Having studied listening for a bit, and understanding, confirming, and clarifying as a good listener, as a speaker and a person who's attempting to get something through, if you don't have a really super listener at the other end and you've got fuzzy logic in between, do you have to do a lot of confirming and clarifying? You know, almost like accountability coaching? Now, tell me exactly what it is that you say you were going to do type of stuff.
Well, what did you hear? Yeah, what did you hear? So what are your takeaways from this? I mean, there's a bunch of different ways to ask it, but after every conversation, there should be some kind of, okay, what did you think take away from this? What are your action items? What are my action items? There's a bunch of different ways to ask it, but ultimately, before you let somebody go, you've got to make sure you're both on the same page. You know, one of the things that I see all the time, and I think this was a morning moment on our Facebook page at one point, was the fact that agreement is not the goal of communication. It's the beginning of communication, right? Because when I'm in a business environment, let's say I have an advisor that's not working to the potential that I believe they could and should be. The goal of my conversation with them is not to get them to say, "You're right, boss, I could do better," right? That's the beginning of the conversation, because then that's where the magic happens. So the next question is, great, what can we do about it? And that's where the growth comes from. So agreement is never the goal of communication. It's the beginning of it.
I'm talking with Mike Zralik, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Mike, are you an extension of the technical support center we all know as Garage Guru?
Most definitely. You know, I spend a lot of time there. I'm involved in all the classes that go on there. I actually host classes there, such as our ASC test prep courses. So very much so an extension of that.
Mike, you're in the shop. So what's the greatest outcome that you see from the techs and service advisors that you're spending time with?
Not only are they learning about great product, but we get to talk shop. So, like, you know, I was in a shop earlier today, and we were talking about some electrical diagnosis he was doing, and he was actually having a problem finding some schematics, and we were able to work with that and talk back and forth. So I was able to get educated on a problem he's having in the field, you know, where I can share that with others, and I can share other ideas from other people with him.
Do you actually put product in the hands of the technicians?
You have to. That's, you know, in this industry, a lot of guys are like myself. You got to touch it, feel it, play with it. You know, just telling them about features and benefits isn't going to sell it. You put it in their hands, that's going to sell it hands down.
So you take the new Wagner OEX brake pad and you put it in someone's hands. What happens?
First thing they do is say, wow. You know, and then they start asking questions about the unique design of it, the unique shape, and the purpose of that. You know, and they're very blown away by the technology that we put into it. They're amazed by it, and they're loving it.
Eyes light up, aha moments.
You bet. You bet. And why is it taking so long to get this out in the market?
And I need them, and I want it right now.
Exactly.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. How's mindset play in here?
Mindset is everything from running the business to dealing with customers. And let's face it, there's two kinds of customers, right? This is nothing new. We have external customers. They're the one that pay the bills. And we have internal customers, and they're the ones that help us get the money. But ultimately, if I don't have the right mindset, you know, I'll have a shop owner that will call me up and ask, you know, say, I'm really, you know, start complaining about their help and how they don't have a lot of energy. And, you know, they're not as enthusiastic and everything as they should be. But you listen to him on the phone and he sounds like a wet fish. And what I say to my owners is this, is that your employees are mirrors of what the owner is bringing to the business. If you want more enthusiasm in your business, be more enthusiastic. If you want higher energy, bring higher energy. If you want your employees to be on time, be on time. It's really that easy.
I can't help but think business culture here.
Exactly. And you know something, with the shortage, you know, everybody's really scrambling and looking to how do I find this tech or how do I find this advisor? But I think the deeper question is the reason you're looking for these people is because somebody left. How do you keep them? And it's the culture. See, after a certain amount of income, employees, money doesn't reward them. Unfortunately, we're such a poor managing industry as a whole, even though owners are the most loyal group of people that I've ever met. Like I had an owner that I was talking to and I said, why don't you say a good, you know, tell this guy he did a good job. And he goes, nobody ever told me. I was like, so what? Are we going to continue the cycle and fix this? You know, the reality is after a certain amount of money, people want to know they matter. The people want to know that they make a difference.
Rick, when you hear that from a CEO of a business, does it surprise you if because they've never been in a 20 group, they've never had a network of peers, they've never really improved their education? Or is it that they've done all this and yet they just can't get out of their own way?
It's going to be, you know, there's not going to be one answer to that. I mean, there's going to be some that haven't been exposed to it yet. I mean, in the absence of coaching or management training, an owner can only manage to the point they've been managed to. They can't go above what they know. You know, I was working with a truck shop and he had a manager that was very good at what he did, but they found that he was embezzling money. So we let him go, prosecuted him, and he went through three or four people. And on the fourth manager, we're talking and he says, this guy just has no follow-up skills, this and that. And well, I said, well, where did he come from? Where did the manager come from? And he came from a national chain that's famous for basically one visit. You either get everything then or you don't get it at all. So follow-up skills weren't needed. Sales skills were needed. Now, he was more relationship-based, so the follow-up skills were really important. And they are in most of our shops. So I sat down. I said, you've got to show him how to do it your way. Because each one of us has a brand. It's how we feel and the experience the customer has. And it's our job as a business owner. Look, a business owner only has four jobs in a business. First one is to create and protect your brand. You've got to make sure that regardless of who's helping that customer at the front counter, they feel the same way. Used to be we were in the experience economy. Today we're in the emotion economy. It's about how we make them feel. Customers and ultimately employees, absolutely, because again, they're both customers.
Got it, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Let's face it, if I'm a customer and I go somewhere and they don't appreciate me, do I stay? No, and it's the same for employees. If I buy labor from a tech and I can't sell it, is he going to stay? No, and it's the same with advisor. If an advisor's there and he's not appreciated and he feels like he's carrying the weight of the world and he has no support, he's not going to stay. He's going to go someplace else. And here's the thing. When we employ employees, when we hire them on three levels, right? You have the hands, you're getting their hands, but you also have their heart and their head. We have to engage them mentally and emotionally.
Yeah.
And the most engaged an employee ever is the first day of work. After that, it starts to go down unless you do a really great job with culture at keeping them engaged and letting them know how much they're appreciated and valued. And at the same time, you need to push them to grow.
Rick, I really want to get into the four responsibilities of a shop owner, but what you were just saying pretty much talks to me about hiring for attitude.
Oh, absolutely. See, we're an industry that hires for ability and fires for attitude.
Where in the chart on the world of how I hire for attitude, is there? Can you teach someone that?
So yes, you can train to hire for attitude. But see, one of the things we have to overcome again is that story that we need a very technical person up front, let's say for an advisor, and we don't. See, the last thing we want to do is talk gibberish because that's what it is. When we talk technical to a customer, we're thinking we're building credibility. But if you've ever seen Charlie Brown, what you hear is Charlie Brown's teacher. Wah, 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 wah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the customer hears. And ultimately, when they hear that, their stress level goes up because they understand, I don't know a word he's saying. He could be taking advantage of me and I have no idea. So the goal here is not to hire someone that's technically competent because, again, that's a technician. And a lot of times technicians are technicians because they like talking to cars better than people.
Right.
And we've got to recognize that. You know, Leona Hemsley one time was interviewed and they asked her, how do you train such friendly people? And she looked at them and smiled and said, I hire friendly people. You can't train soft skills, right? I have to hire those. And we are an industry who hire people for what they can do and fire them for who they are. And we've got to stop that. We've got to start looking at who this person is and what they bring to the table from an emotional perspective, right? From success characteristics that are going to help our company grow and that will nurture and develop the shop culture.
But it really starts with a good culture. If you don't have a culture for someone to fit into, you may hire an extremely important person with the right attitude. And because the culture isn't there, they're also going to be gone.
Right. And here's the thing. Culture is one of those words that really scares people because they don't, it's kind of like, I want to grab it, but I can't, it's like air. I can't grab air, right? So let's just put a really simple spin on culture. Culture is how you run your business. It's the values that you bring to the table. Your business is run by values every day. If you're not clear about yours, they're being run by your employees. But they're run by values every day. That's the start of it. So values is the first part of culture. And then the second part of it is your mission. What are you there to do? What is the purpose of you being there? Serving, you know? And if you're clear on that and you're clear on the values that you bring to the table, then you're going to find you attract people that share those same things and magnify what you want to bring to the table. It's really exciting to see when you get it to happen.
I'm glad we took that little offshoot. Now let's go back to the four responsibilities of a shop owner. First was create and protect your brand.
Correct. So that's how do we make the customer feel? And it's the same whether I have Joe, Bob, or Phil work with them. And then it's how do we do the work in the shop? It's got to be the same regardless of the tech that's doing it. And you do that with procedures and processes. A procedure is the closest you'll ever get to cloning yourself.
Clone myself, do it this way. Oh, but we have to have a process. So because that's a process and this is how I do it, then so be it, I'm a clone. It clones me.
It clones the ability, right? Or it clones the way it's done.
So we come up with this process and someday down the road, life changes, things changes, the environment of the shop changes, technology changes. I can't keep doing it this way anymore. And I'm really not in the bays anymore. I'm working on my business, not in it. Is it okay for a shop owner to say, let's create the new process together, even though it's not necessarily mine?
I'm going to give you one further. Procedures should be reviewed at least annually. The best time to review procedures is with a new hire. You bring the new hire in and you review the procedures with everybody. And it reinforces them and it gets them to help the new guy, gal, come up to speed quicker. Now, as you're reviewing the procedures on an annual or biannual basis, you should always be asking yourself, can we do this better?
Back in the day with my business, I would lock the door, everyone leaves, turn off put the night lights on and stand in the business and think about what the day was like and where the buzz was happening and where the log jams were. And what was said and what the process is, what it all looked like. And I would say, you know, I think we need to change how we do this. So what you're really saying is you can't fly away from the hive. You have to always keep an eye on it, but you have to ask your people, hey, I just thought about this the other day. Am I right or am I wrong? Do you have a better or different way to do it?
Yeah, I can wait until I feel like I have to do it, or I can do it as a part of, a process.
A commitment to continual improvement.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. I might have an employee that is really technically up to date with all the new apps and stuff like that, that might help me with something that I'm not aware of. I might also have an advisor that's on the front counter or a tech in the back where a current process is hindering something. But if I'm not aware of it and I bring it to them and say, okay, I think this is going well, or I say, I think we have a problem, it's waiting for me to instigate that process. I rather would have a shop every 6 months or once a year sit down and say, here are our procedures. Does this make sense? And you go through maybe one or two or three a week. a lot of times it's going to be, yep, this is fine. Yep, this is fine. Yep, this is fine. And then every once in a while, you're going to hit one and say, hey, we got to do this better. And then you start, you stop right there and you have a conversation. And it might be a one or two meeting, three meeting conversation before you come up with something. But the cool thing is when we involve our staff in these things, no longer are they being dictated to. They're now part of the process, and buy-in, the almighty sacred buy-in, is much closer and quicker.
How many employees want to be in on things in every business? In fact, it always ranks higher than more money.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. An owner thinks he's protecting his employees, but in the absence of knowledge, fear takes over. And that's always bad. And here's the thing. A lot of times we're dealing with guys that are, you know, I'm 55. I just turned 55. So we have guys that are older as owners. And, you know, we come from the compliance, what I call the compliance age, which was you got told what to do. You weren't asked for an opinion. I think at one point I was told if I wanted an opinion, the boss told me, if I want your opinion, I'll squeeze your head. So it's one of those things where we're still in that age. A lot of us, or we are, that's our go-to response. But we're not looking for compliance today. We're looking for commitment. We're looking for team members, not employees. And we only have a team member when we have their head, their heart, and their hands, when they're completely and emotionally, mentally, and physically engaged.
That's important. Head, heart, and hands. That's important. Important takeaway in this episode.
So number one is create and protect your brand. Number two is to generate awareness of your business. Shop owners, that business is their life. They live, eat, sleep, drink, breathe that business. But I guarantee you, not enough people in your market know you're there. I actually had an argument when I had my shop. I had an argument with a guy about where my business was located. Had a new customer, had a check engine light issue. He was referred to us by somebody else. We got through the whole part. He says, okay, we're on, you know, the name of the shop was Tremont Street Garage. He goes, okay, I'm guessing you're on Tremont Street. And I said, great. He says, where are you? I said, we're between the fire station and the car wash. And he goes, no, you're not. And I said, I promise you, you pull in after you go by the fire station, pull in. And I said, unless we had a really strong wind the night before, and I'm talking Wizard of Oz wind, we'll be there. And he came in laughing. He said, Rick, I've driven by this place for 10 years, never saw it. We changed the sign twice, lined and cleaned the parking lot out, added gardens, and painted the building two different times. And he never saw the shop. We think people know we're here. They don't. You need to get loud and you need to get proud. Get involved in the community. And here's the thing. You know, marketing is only comes in two ways. We either send something out to somebody or it's what I call FaceTime, right? Marketing always costs you something. It's either going to be an investment in time or money. And I'm telling you right now that the investment in time is paying off a lot better than all the social media and the mailings and everything like that. Don't get me wrong. You need to do them. But if you're looking to attract and generate awareness, FaceTime is the way to do it.
You mean community? You mean organizations?
Community, organizations, networking groups, getting involved in the local schools. That kind of thing has huge impact on the business, a lot better. Here's the thing. We need to get people to know, like, and trust us before they ever start to do business with us. And marketing today, we are so inundated. The last time I read, I think we're exposed to 30,000 ads a day. So they get your marketing piece in the mail. It's just like, we are experts at just shutting that stuff off. We DVR everything. Man, my wife and I were watching a show yesterday and we were watching it live and had to watch the commercials. Man, I wanted to gnaw my arm off.
So here I am, I'm sitting down and I'm thinking about how can I create awareness and improved awareness of my business. And the first thing I'm going to think of is I'm going to do a Facebook ad or I'm going to do some kind of promotion. I guess what you're saying is the harder part to do, the engaged awareness in the community, takes a whole lot more effort than swiping my credit card and trying to find my exact avatar customer through Facebook to come in and see me with the coupon or the special that gives you a one chance opportunity. And I think what you're saying is community gives you a lot more than a one chance opportunity.
Well, absolutely it does. And here's the thing, Karma, any business owner that's thinking of doing that Facebook ad, absolutely it should be part of their plan. Mm-hmm. The problem is I think we're looking for silver bullets when none exist, right? The only silver bullet that's out there is do something. And here's the thing. You said something that I smiled at. You said the avatar customer. You're assuming that the shop has an idea of who their ideal customer is. You know, we still have shops that are saying they don't differentiate. They just figure if it's got four wheels and a key, I'm good.
You know, one of our interviews, and I wish I could think of it off the top of my head, they actually have the avatar in a cardboard cutout in the back room, in the employee training room, the lounge. That avatar has been perfectly described, and everyone knows who that person is. And the thing I love about having an avatar, or what they say is the perfect customer, is that when they walk in the building, you know in your heart you have to do everything you possibly can to make that person a customer, because they will love doing business with you because you've made it your mission and your purpose to make that happen.
Absolutely. And when we have an avatar, we no longer use a shotgun to market. We use a sniper rifle. And it costs a whole lot less for advertising and marketing because we're going after a very segmented market.
Yeah. If anyone wants to go back and watch or listen to the Academy on social media, why it matters, there was a lot of discussion on how to take that avatar and zero in a Facebook ad and only spend a few bucks to actually, as you say, snipe.
Yes, it's all it is. And it's painful because, you know, when I start my marketing program with a shop, my first question is, why, as a prospective customer, would I drive by three other shops to come do business with you? If you can't answer that question, your customers aren't going to come. And 9 times out of 10, the answer I get is, I don't know, which is awesome because we can work on that.
Is it a challenge to bring on a new client?
Well, you got to be careful because a lot of times you end up with people that feel like if they write you a check, it's going to make their business grow. But there's an investment on their end that where their business, they actually have to increase their investment in time and effort in the beginning to get that growth going. Mm-hmm. It's like if you had a big rock in the back of your yard and you wanted to move it out of the way. Where is all the energy expended? Same as taking a plane off the ground. 40% of its fuel is used in takeoff. It's all in the beginning. It's in the going. It's getting the momentum. And it's really cool. In the beginning, it takes 4 parts effort to get 1 unit results. But at some point, it flips, and then you get 1 unit of effort, and you get 4 units of results.
I actually had that happen to me. I had to pull a big rock. I finally dug it out, strapped it, pulled it on my quad, and it was so hard to get it going. But once I had it going,
The beauty of momentum.
Yes, it was great. Thank you for bringing that mental picture for me.
Number 3 is grow your people. One of the things I used to tell my employees when I hired them is I said to them, I said, look, I'm not hiring for who you and what you can do today. I'm hiring you for who I and what you I believe you can do tomorrow. And there's got to be a part of our culture, right? That values that we have is continuous improvement. Businesses don't get better. The people in the business do. And then the business gets better. You know, the third thing is grow your people. And Goethe said, if you treat someone as they are, they will always remain that way. But if you treat them as they could and should be, that's who they'll become. So we have to set a standard.
You've got to see that light in the people that you have working for you. You are the person who needs to see the potential in them if they can't.
Before them. It's like a kid. You push your people to do something new. Think about when your little boy or little girl was learning to ride a bike or throw a football. And they're like, no, I can't. No, I can't. And you're going, yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. They're borrowing your confidence and until they can develop their own. And we have to be cheerleaders for our staff, just like we were with our kids, right? And it's the same when you were talking. If you were an effective parent, when you talk to your child, you know, looping back around to where we were in the beginning, you made sure they heard what you said. And it's the same with employees. We got to make sure they hear what we say. So we've got to grow our people. We've got to set a standard and an expectation, and then we got to walk the talk. And a lot of times I see people hire, you know, a technician and the guy's an A tech, but he won't go to training because it wasn't discussed and part of an expectation when he was hired. So now you feel, well, I really can't make him go, but that A tech 3 years down the road is a B minus tech. That's how fast things are changing. We need to keep them trained. So number four is you've got to set your pace. You've got to set the pace in your business. Pace is actually an acronym. The P in pace stands for purpose and passion. A stands for activity and attitude. C stands for commitment and caring. And E stands for energy and expectation.
In fact, those are almost eight fabulous words to, you know, put up, you know, get on the bulletin board every day and take a look at them. It all comes down to the why. Do you teach the why to your clients?
Absolutely. It comes right after what. Most of the time, what happens is we go from what to how. I want this, or I want to get here, or, and then we go to how. And the how is one of two ways, either how I can or how I can't. I can't do that because of this, and I can't do that because of this. We create log jams. We create our own log jams with our stories and our beliefs.
The how is the fact, oh, we repair cars, but really the what is that we are here to solve our customers' problems. That's what we do.
Maybe the what is I want to make $1 million a year or $2 million a year. Maybe I, you know, do you see what I'm saying? The what? The why can be, why do I want to make it? And then what am I going to do to get it? Right? Napoleon Hill says we can get anything we want if we're willing to give. Right? There's no free handouts. So yes, what do I want? Where do I want to go? And why do I want to get there? What's important to me? I talk to shop owners and to employees, and they think they're doing just a job. But when you really step back and think about it, people are trusting the lives, their lives, and the lives of their families every day to us. That's an awesome responsibility. The fact that you can treat a customer better and more sincerely than anybody else truly could be a calling and a mission, a life's mission, knowing. You know, when you asked me about the first time I did the coaching, I did that first coaching, and all of a sudden it was like a bright light shined down on me, and a voice inside of me said, this is why I put you here, is to help people. And, you know, the funny part is going back to the beginning there, I thought I just needed strategies. But if they don't believe, right, if their mindset's not right, that's a problem. And if there are other areas in their life that's not right, if their home life is bad, business is never going to be good. If they have financial issues, business will never be good. If they have relationship issues, business will never be good. Business can be an escape, but it never is good. So it's amazing what you end up dealing with. And I thank the good Lord for being there with me to help me with it. Because we've worked with clients on marriages, and not that I'm a psychologist or any a marriage counselor in any way, but I've been married more than once and kind of have some experience.
And a lot of times those external issues as a business owner are internal issues. They really are. Yeah,
absolutely. And you know, home is important. You know, Zig Ziglar said, if home base isn't right, nothing's right. It's really true.
Rick, you read a lot of books, don't you?
Yeah, I read somewhere between 60 and 80 books a year.
Any books that you've read that helps you and your coaching clients when it comes to always comparing ourselves to other things and other people?
People compare all the time, right? I don't think there's been one book per se that's helped me with that. Let's see, it's 2017. So I've been coaching now for 14 years. Over time, being able to see the results of comparison. You know, Mark Twain, he has a great quote on comparison. He says, comparison is the death of joy. And I love that quote. I'm a big quote guy, because quotes, you can unpack them, and there are such great lessons inside. Most times when we compare ourselves to, we're going to compare ourselves either to somebody else, or we're going to compare ourselves to our past. So let's take each one separately. If we compare ourselves to someone else, they're either going to be doing better than us, which may fuel us forward, but it could demotivate us and slow us down and make us feel like we're not worthy and we're stupid and we can't do it. Or if we compare ourselves to somebody that's doing worse than us, then we puff up our chest, we feel better, and we slow down again.
We may almost hit a ceiling in our own minds.
Exactly, because of who we're comparing ourselves to. Why do you think Jerry Springer was on TV for so long, right? I feel bad about my life. Let me turn the TV on. Holy crap, I'm doing pretty good.
Just 1 hour to make me feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't take much, right? So that's the first thing. The other thing is when we compare ourselves to our prior performance, what ends up happening is we celebrate such small improvement that we never really see our potential. See, if you're going to compare yourself to something, you should always compare yourself to your potential, because that'll always kick your butt.
How do you know what your potential is?
What I do is when I'm looking at a shop, I look at their potential of labor hours billed per day. That's where I start. So if we have 4 good techs, we might start at 40 or 50 hours billed per day, depending upon the situation, right? And then we take what their average revenue is and we go with that. But I always start with the potential I have in the shop and then build the model from there.
So you're talking hard numbers here, not hard to quantify something you can measure, but what about my potential as a leader?
The potential is endless. In other words, there is no end. The leader I am, like I said earlier, you know, if we taped my coaching calls back in 2003, my first calls, you and I would have a real hoot. Today, they're much different. Why? Because I think I call it through the power of debrief.
Well, I guess if we strive to be really good at what we do, it is a hoot to go back and look at the younger you, be it even 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. And the cool thing is every once in a while we need to, because if all we do is stare at our potential, it can discourage us. So we stare at our potential, but every once in a while we stop and we celebrate our improvement, because that improvement and remembering why we're doing it, that's the fuel for us to keep going.
You and I, on our pre-call, talked about transparency, and you really piqued my interest when you started to talk about the value the internet is in allowing the world to take a look at the parts pricing. You know, here's a bill. God help us if we actually put the part number down on the invoice. It's so easy to look that up, and that brings a level of transparency like we've never, ever had before. Talk to me about, you know, your feelings on transparency.
I'm going to step back just a little bit, if I may. And we've got to remember that when we're talking to a customer, we think we have one process, which is our sales process. But there's actually 3 processes at work here. There's our sales process, there's their buying process, and then their decision-making process, right? Now, we have to manage ours, control theirs, and watch and be aware of the decision-making process. So years ago, when we're going to buy something, we recognize we have a problem. That's the first step in a buying process. We recognize we have a problem. Then we search for information. Then we evaluate our options, make a decision, purchase, and then we decide after that purchase, we do kind of a debrief. Are we going to do it again or not? Now, years ago, before the internet, when a customer had a problem, we were the guys they came to. We were their source of information. This industry, there is so much information on the internet today, we are no longer seeing the customer at the very beginning of the problem recognition. We're not seeing them until they're evaluating options. Because they're going online, because they're doing research, because they're going through all these things. Now, since our pre-call, I was doing some thought on that. And I was thinking, you know why they do that? Now, you ask any shop owner why, and I'll bet you they say it's to save money. And I don't think that's it at all. I think a customer or potential customer is doing it because they're afraid, being taken advantage of, not knowing what's going on, feeling helpless.
So they want to be in control.
Either be in control or have some information or some knowledge that they can fact check you on.
If treat me fairly, then I can trust you.
Absolutely. This past weekend, I was putting on a training class called Getting to Yes with Confidence. And one of the participants brought up customers looking up, you know, YouTube and Google and everything else and the parts. And I said, why do you think they do that? And one guy said, because they're cheap. And another guy said, because they're trying to save money. I said, guys, you're not thinking this through. It's because they're afraid. See, if you had the complete trust of somebody, would they call? Would they go online and look? They don't have the time. It's because they don't trust. And I think that's the bigger issue, because if we work on our trust, that goes away. If a customer doesn't feel like they're going to get taken advantage of, They don't look around. Look, when I rent a car, I go to Enterprise every time. I've tried other people. I've tried cheaper prices. I don't want it. I want to be treated a certain way. I want a certain product and I want it delivered a certain way. They do it every time. That's who I do business with. And it's the same with the garage I use here. I just call them. Here, I need this. Do it. I trust him. I'm not looking this stuff up. I don't have time. He's my guy. Okay. And if we were aware that these people that are calling or looking these things up more specifically, it's because they're afraid. We are upset because customers are doing this. And it's because we want, I truly believe that as an industry, we still want to be the information guys, but we've got to change our tactic. Years ago, before the internet, we were those guys. But today, as a society, we're drowning in information. We don't need more information. It's out there. You know, I live in the country, and I have a well for my water system. And the pressure wasn't what I wanted. I went on YouTube, 9-minute video. I watched it on setting the pressures for my water system. And in 15 minutes, I had it where I wanted it. Now, I just that video cost a plumber a job. That's the fact of life today. What we've got to understand is customers are drowning in information and starving for insight. And insight is just applied information.
And you can give insight at your counter.
Absolutely. You can give insight on the phone. I had a customer with a Mazda Miata, and he came in and he says, I'm going to sell my car. So we did the oil change. We went through his vehicle, found 4 different things that it needed. It needed a timing belt, a valve cover gasket, a coolant flush, and a brake flush. And I asked him, I said, John, why are you getting rid of the car, if you don't mind me asking? He says, oh, my wife just found out we're expecting our first child. And I said, congratulations. Big smile on my face, right? 7 kids, man. I know what that's like, right? And for those out there, grandkids are even better. Here's the thing. Instead of just saying, oh, okay, I get it. You can't put a car seat in the car. And then buttoning it up, I asked him, this is where insight kicks in. John, are you going to trade the vehicle in or are you going to sell it privately? And he says to me, he goes, I'm not sure. Can you explain to me, you know, the pros and cons? So I went in, hey, if you trade it in, you don't have any issues with it, but you don't make as much on it because they got to resell it and make cash. The other way, you make more money, but you've got to put up with the ads and people driving it and that thing. Which do you want to do? He says, I want to sell it privately. At that point, I said, well, if you're going to sell it privately, I would fix this leak and take care of the timing belt so that if they have it looked at by another shop, it's going to be in pristine condition. What do you think? And he said, do it.
Insight, trust, it's the epitome of a great relationship with a customer because you were willing to reach out and say, listen, I've got some perspective on what you're about ready to do. Don't be afraid to offer up, for lack of a better term, your insights.
Right. But how did I get the insight?
Well, you were a good listener. You were looking to solve a problem.
But I asked questions. We got to become experts of asking questions.
So talk to me. I'm bringing in my own parts. Because I looked on the internet, so I said, well, hey, this is okay. Someone said I need a timing belt or a water pump and something. So I go buy it. I call a shop, and I keep calling and calling to find out someone who's willing to put my parts on. People want me to do an academy series on, you know, what happens when people bring their own parts. Do you have an opinion on that?
Ultimately, we're independent business people. We recently did a webinar called To Install or Not to Install. And in that webinar, we talked about what the issues were. I am slanted on don't install customer supplied parts ever for a multitude of reasons. But in the webinar, we actually talked about why, what the issues are and why I feel the way I do. The problem that we have is when we present it to the customer, we get indignant. We get upset with them. Like, are you kidding me? It's like going into church with muddy feet or something. You know, it's just... And again, what's the customer trying to do? They're afraid. They're trying to control it. They're trying to save money. So when we're talking to a customer, the moment you talk about the fact that you're losing gross profit, or, hey, do you buy a steak and bring it to the restaurant for them to cook? The moment we say that, customer doesn't care. And we have blown any chance of relationship. You know, in business, Carm, the first rule when you're digging a hole is stop.
Rule of holes, know when to stop digging.
So when we present this to the customer, we have to present it in such a way that it's customer focused. The benefits are focused on them, on allowing us to get them the parts. Here's why you want to do this. And there's like four or five really great reasons. One of them I call the he said, she said. So here's what's here's what happens. You buy the part. I put it on. The part fails. I take it off. You bring it back to the... Now, you've got to come get the broken part. And we're going to either push your car out or we're going to charge you for a while it's on the lift. And, oh, by the way, you're going to bring it back to the parts store and they're going to tell you that the part wasn't bad. It was an installation error. So here I am telling you it's a part failure. They're going to tell you it's an installation problem and you're stuck in the middle. Mr. Customer, do you really have time for that? Or I bought these, you know, the factory injectors, $200, but you found these injectors online on eBay for $18 a piece and you think they're going to work just as good. So we have the whole issue of counterfeit parts and poorly made parts, and you know, quality issue is always going to be out there. And I think it behooves us to be in control of that part of it. However, I do believe that as an industry, we will be changing our pricing model in probably the next 4 to 5 years, where, you know, gross profit is gross profit. And if I, as a shop, decide, you know, I'm going to sell the parts at cost and move all my gross profit into labor, it really doesn't make a difference. As long as I access the parts, heck, I'll give them the part slips. Here you go. Look, this is what I paid for it. So we know we're still getting a quality part. We know we're getting the part we're supposed to be getting. It's not a counterfeit part.
So you can stand behind your work and your labor rate goes up to reflect the margin you need to make for a well-run shop with a good double-digit net operating income.
Absolutely.
So in essence, you're saying you're even willing to show the invoice for acquisition to your customers so that they don't have that trust and that transparency is totally open?
Absolutely. Why not? At that point, it's not a big deal. Carpenters, for years, right, they do 10 over, right, to cover handling. They show you the invoices, right? And everything's on the labor side. This is not a new concept. It's just a new concept for us.
Suppliers today are offering earn backs if you join an association or you spend so much volume. And all of that is after invoice. So, you know, you still could have 10 to 12 points sitting under the invoice. And if you go 10 over and now you're making maybe a 22 to 25 and you change your labor rate, you're probably still going to come out okay. I hear your strategy. It's the people that you've run this by, have they called it radical? Rick, you're crazy? Or, interesting.
I wish I could tell you, Carm, how many times I've been asked if I'm on drugs. And it's not just for this. It's for other things, too. When I sit down with a shop owner who thinks he's doing great, doing $50,000 a month, and I tell him he should be doing $150,000 a month, and he says, you're on drugs, and then 9 months later apologizes...
Wait a minute, because the condo that he's living in Florida is because that's the business coach's condo.
Well, that's what I tried to explain to him, but he wouldn't have any of that. But anyway, with a smile, of course. So, you know, you got to have fun doing this. And when we're working with shops, any shop, when you're working with anybody teaching them something, you can't be totally serious. You've got to have fun. You've got to be able to poke fun at yourself.
But you are serious about this parts thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely I am. I truly believe that's where we're going. I would have a labor rate because the price is going to be about the same. It's not going to change. It's just we're being honest about it. Look, this is what it costs to run a business. This is what we're doing with the parts. It's just being transparent.
With what's going on with all of the online parts sellers and with the services that are comparing all kinds of services and all kinds of parts pricing, I mean, it doesn't matter what industry that we're in. There's some kind of e-platform that is out there telling you where to make decisions. It's amazing. There's interrupters, if you will, in front of everything we do.
And they're not going to slow down.
Imagine a site because I have a toothache. And so you go, instead of calling the dentist, you go to the app. How crazy would that be? But you know,
they
you're
have
right.
That with doctors now. There are apps out there where you can get a doctor on your iPad for like $50. They go in, you show them what's going on, and they'll write a prescription and everything for you. I mean, it's nuts where it's going. you're going to, you know, it's going to be Star Trek, right? The Star Trek when they did, I don't know which version of it was, but they had the holographic doctor that came up. You know, it's going to happen. It's the way it is. You know, we got to stop thinking cars and carburetors, and we got to start thinking Geordie LaForge. I mean, that's where we're headed. You know, you talk about the fly-by-wire, you talk about all these navigation systems and the things keeping you in the lanes and everything. I mean, the technology's nuts.
Rick, enlightening. I enjoyed it. I personally took a lot of great notes. I learned some things. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you.
You will come back and we could do round two someday?
I would love that.
Thank you to Rick White, president and lead coach from 180biz. Thanks, man.
You're welcome. Hey, listen, Carm, I'm on a mission. This industry for years has subsidized auto repair for our customers at our expense. And it's time we ran businesses the way they should be run. And I'm on a mission, a crusade to help businesses do that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick White, for paying it forward and sharing your wisdom exclusively for the Remarkable Results radio podcast listeners. Rick is a passionate aftermarket professional and was straight up and transparent in this interview, and that continues to be a hallmark of the podcast. Find the show notes for Rick White and the episode's talking points at remarkableresults.biz/E242. Thanks for listening. I hope you continue to find a treasure trove of inspiration and insights for your own business and for yourself as a leader. And please don't forget that you now have the Town Hall Academy Forum as a personal resource for your edification. Every Academy episode is being repurposed as a podcast, and there are great subjects there to engage with. Find them all at remarkableresults.biz/learning. You know, everything you could possibly want to know about the podcasts and the powerful content is on my homepage. Stop by remarkableresults.biz and spend a few moments and explore. And please share this content-rich resource with your friend. I'm grateful and thankful for your support.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.